Good morning. I'd like to call the Senate Education Committee to order at 8 a.m. And today is Monday, March 20th. And this morning we have present Senator Coghill, Senator Giesel, and Senator Begich getting coffee. And I'm Chair Hughes. And I'd like to thank those helping us and those being trained to help us in the future. Appreciate that. Remember, silence your cell phone. Today we have three committee hearings. First, we'll have Mary Hughes, who is seeking a third term on the University of Alaska Board of Regents and is from Anchorage. And following Ms. Hughes will be David Piazza from Dillingham, and he is seeking a second term on the Professional Teaching Practices Commission. And finally, we will have Kent Runyon from Nome, who is also seeking a position, but it is his first one, to the Professional Teaching Practices Commission. So at this point, I'd like to invite Mary Hughes, if she is online, to begin her testimony. Good morning, Mary. Please state your name for the record and your affiliation, and tell us a little bit about yourself and your goals with the commission or the Board of Regents.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Mary Kay Hughes, and I presently live in Anchorage, Alaska. I was born on Kodiak Island several years ago. I've been on the Board of Regents for 15 years. Governor Knowles initially appointed me. Governor Murkowski sent my name to the legislature for confirmation. Sarah Palin reappointed me, and of course I've been reappointed now by Governor Walker. My family's, I guess, first priority in Alaska has always been, since my dad arrived on Kodiak Island in 1940, education. And we believe strongly in public education, as well as from K-12 and also higher education. My father was a University of South Dakota graduate, so he was always very, very committed to public education. He served on the Kodiak School Board and the Anchorage School Board, and of course he co-founded the University of Alaska Foundation. I know you have my resume, and Madam Chair, I would entertain questions. I don't want to, I know you have lots to do. I'm very up to date on what everybody's doing at Juno, and I appreciate the time you're spending with me.
Thank you, Mary, and for the record, Mary and I are not related. I just thought I'd mention that, although maybe way back at some point. Does anyone have a question? No questions?
Well,
Senator Begich, I guess he does.
Mary, I hate to leave you without a question. Thank you, Madam Chair. We've had a lot of talk about technology, and over the last maybe 2 months, we've talked about the importance of technology to education in Alaska, and the whole teacher training piece, and as we move toward a more tech world, what are your plans or thoughts as a member of the Board of Regents for how the university could improve its teaching program to ensure that our teachers are actually skilled and able to use the technology they're presented?
Through the Chair, Senator Begich, the Board of Regents of the University of Alaska has been working for several years on improving our ability to teach Alaskan teachers. I'm particularly committed because our family, in memory of my sister, established a scholarship at the university, a full-ride scholarship for students that wish to go into teaching. The Regents, several years ago, through a subcommittee of Gloria O'Neill, who's now chair, and myself, we came up with the Regents' Big Four, and that we wanted staff to, and the president and chancellor, to really concentrate on. You mentioned two of our big four, e-learning and teacher education. As you probably know, the Regents took action to reformulate the way in which we teach education. And now the chancellor of the University of Alaska Southeast is charged with the responsibility statewide for providing teacher education. That education will be provided, as it is now, in on campus, in a classroom, as well as via, if you want to call it, distance learning or e-learning. we feel it is imperative, and this president, President Johnson, has made a commitment to increase the number of Alaskans teaching in Alaska schools, and particularly the rural areas. We have other things in the works. None of them, we're looking at all of the concepts with respect to additional e-learning, and some of our professors are, as a matter of fact, one of the professors in Anchorage, Professor Klein, has received a grant, and he's working with the IT people to put general education requirements in e-learning. And so, and that was one of the third one of the region's four. So the regions, and it was probably 2 years ago or more, the regions really understood that we had to kind of change the way we, we had to change the way in which we're educating students. But more importantly, you will not be able to educate Alaskan students or any students if you can't attract the students. So, of course, we're doing a big program with respect to enhancing the students' learning about the University of Alaska so that we might see the students after they graduate. Thank you.
Senator Begich?
So thank you for that answer, Ms. Hughes. What was the fourth of the big four?
I knew you were going to ask me that. my mind is blank. But I'll think about it, Senator Begich, and when I find out, I'll let you know, okay? Because we went through them all, and I know what it was. It was developmental learning. I think at one time it was called remedial education. When students come out of the high schools, able to take college courses. We have a huge developmental learning group. I think when President Gamble came on, he counted some 400 or 500 developmental courses. And as you know, Alaska, as the nation, is not very successful with the developmental learning. In other words, if a student goes through developmental learning, it doesn't mean some don't make it through, but if the student makes it through, it doesn't mean that he or she will complete a college education in 4 to 6 years.
Senator Giesel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Hughes, I appreciate your dedication to the University of Alaska, clearly all these years of serving on the Board of Regents. And, of course, Senator Coghill and I, both being from Fairbanks, remember the days when the University of Alaska meant the campus in Fairbanks. But we've grown. We have multiple campuses now, three main ones, and we continue to have an issue with credits not being interchangeable among the campuses. You've been there through all these years. When do you think this problem will be resolved?
Through the chair, Senator Giesel, I'm very much aware of the concern, and as a matter of fact, one of the things in 2002 we were trying to do is get a common calendar and also common course numbers. And I'm a graduate of the University of Alaska, then situated in, or it was the University of Alaska, situated in Fairbanks, resident in Fairbanks. But each of the separate universities had separate calendars. That means separate spring breaks, separate starting times. So we really concentrated on that. And as of, I believe it's fall of 18, we will have a common calendar. And hopefully, at least from the GER level, common course delineations. That is the foundation for transferability that is seamless. Now, we've improved a lot with respect to transfer credits. As a matter of fact, many of our students attend all three universities, as well as, of course, not only online, mainly online. Like if you're in Anchorage and there's a higher division course in Fairbanks, you can take it online. But they also transfer. My own family has had education majors transferring from Fairbanks to to Juno, and everything transfers. So there are particular anecdotal, and I even hear them, as you do, times in which certain things go awry, and we try to fix that as quickly as possible. As a matter of fact, I was talking a couple of months ago to in a private conversation with the president, and he said he had just come from a meeting with respect to certain credit issues, and he was going to get them resolved. So even our president is intervening when there's some issues. And some of it is not necessarily, some of it is lack of training of the people that certain students are talking to. You know, it's a big place, as you know, but the regents, I mean, getting the common calendar and getting all of the courses, every English 105 or whatever, it was 101 when I was there, but 105 course, the same course and the same material, that's extremely important. And I believe that with the strategic pathways, it's a good way for everyone to think similarly. And it's, change is very difficult for all of us, and I think it's a process of sticking to it and making sure that the deadlines are met. And that's what we've tried to do. And it's a heavy lift.
Follow-up, Senator Giesel?
No, thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes, I would just note that you said that the process started in 2002, and it's been a long time coming, so hopefully it will be seamless very soon. Senator Begich.
I actually have to follow up by saying I completely agree with where Senator Giesel is going here. I'm a little mystified. You know, this is a I hope, Ms. Hughes, that assuming you're back on the Board of Regents, that you'll make it a bit of a priority. This is a single university system, and there's really no excuse for credits not to be transferable. That, to me, that seems like a fairly simple thing. In 2002, that's 15 years ago. I wasn't as aware of it. Thank you, Senator Giesel. I wasn't as aware that they were non-transferable. I also have a degree from the university, and I just want to say, Ms. Hughes, can I hear a more significant commitment than we hope to stick to timelines?
Through the chair, Senator Begich, we haven't. The problem has been a concern since 2002. We are a single system, but three separately accredited universities, and when we are dealing with those types of things like common calendar and also the changing of course numbers and course curriculum, that is in the hands of the faculty. So we're, our university, we have a governance circumstance, and that's where we're, what we're dealing with, and it is a situation that has proved successful. And I feel like, and I understand, and my commitment has always been strong, and if I can make it any stronger, I certainly will. But credits are more transferable now than they were in 2002. What the regents are aiming for is that there's no question about transferability. In other words, if you're taking the same course number in Anchorage as you would in Fairbanks, then that just goes. In effect, what I say, a seamless system. So, like, transferability wouldn't even be an issue. I recall in, and this is, of course, years ago, but when I was in school in Fairbanks, I took summer courses in Anchorage, and I took a business law course, and that business law course was the same number as the course in Fairbanks. And it just went on my record. It didn't even, there was no transferability. And that's exactly, the fact that there were three separately accredited universities under a system has, you know, from the standpoint of perhaps delaying a bit, or perhaps in some ways it's much, much better. But that whole circumstance makes it more effective for us to do as we're doing and absolutely respect the students, the faculty, and the staff organizations that help us get to where we are. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Hughes, I have a question regarding the remedial, or the, what I believe you call it, developmental learning courses. Do they cost the same amount per credit as the other courses? And do you see some students perhaps in those type of courses for more than a year, maybe a couple of years, and then drop out? And the reason I'm asking is because the university is collecting tuition, whether the student, my understanding is whether they're in remedial or regular courses. So if the student goes a couple of years and takes remedial, gets no degree, you're still, I believe, making the same or close to the same in tuition as if they were getting an associate degree in 2 years. Is that correct?
Chair Hughes, I don't know if it's exactly the same, but I assume, and I can obviously get back to you, I assume the there's no credit hour because they don't get credit. So, but they take the three, what we call a three-credit class, and yes, I mean, we get paid. The university, the tuition is charged for that kind of class. Those students may be in developmental courses for 2 years. So, yes, and you know, that's the whole, this is the whole concern nationwide, is that if the universities are not successful in getting a student, in effect, into the first year of college, then the paradigm has to be changed. These developmental courses have not been a successful adventure for any schools. So we're really working on, as a matter of fact, doing more and more with co-educating students, going into a situation, as you're familiar with now Dean of Bishop's work with the university, so that her students could get credit at the university level when they're still in high school. Well, Anchorage, since she's gone to Anchorage, is doing the same thing. Those programs, they are not necessarily aimed at the same type of student, but however, those are very successful with respect to having the student learn. I mean, the whole thing is having the student be able to learn and be educated with respect to how to think. And so sometimes, you know, it's my own personal belief, and I don't know if it's backed up with scientific fact, but by the time you get to be 18 and you've gotten through high school, with a high school degree, and you didn't really have to put forth much brain energy, maybe it's too late. And I hate to say it's too late, but, and I don't know what the scientists say about it, but we're really looking at those courses. So all the way through the university, you know, all the thousands of people that work for the university as well as the Board of Regents, we're all very concerned about that particular segment, and that's why it was part of the Regents Four.
Thank you for that, and thank you for your commitment earlier when you introduced yourself to education, your dedication, because there doesn't seem to be the financial incentive, I don't think, and if that were there, it might really motivate the university to tackle this head on and quickly. I have mentioned to the president, and I don't know if the Board of Regents has discussed it with you all or if you've talked about it as a board, but the possibility of pretty much doing away with the remedial courses and instead have those students in the classes with support and tutoring, and we might be getting more degrees that way. I wanted to ask one more question, and that is, you mentioned some of the strategic pathway work with the president, and we know that the tuition, the amount that the state subsidizes, is very high compared to other states, and we understand we have a larger state, we have a small population, and we get that, but has the board looked at a target as far as a goal per student to reduce the state subsidy?
When you're talking, Madam Chair, when you're talking about the state subsidy, do you mean the general fund money?
Yes.
Okay, because it's going down. And it's gone down not all the time I was on the board, but we're having less and less of general funds going to the support of the university. So our, you know, we have three pots of money, the general fund, we have research, and then we have tuition. So when we have less money, and of course our student population in Alaska in high school is also going down. And does not, we don't expect it to not go down. So we have less students and less money from the state. And so it's a situation that if we cannot strategically shrink and redevelop, in a word, not in developmental classes, but reconfigure the university, but keeping the excellence, the core excellence of the programs it has quickly enough, then in effect, we don't have any money, enough money to do what we're doing. So that's one of the, you know, from a standpoint of the budget, that's why the, we're working, as soon as we get through with one budget, we're working on what is going to happen, say, in 19, that sort of thing. So it's all very, very connected, and I know that several of the regions wish that the tuition was less for students, and we have looked at, and through strategic pathways, if there could be a differentiation of tuition between the campuses. In other words, if you were going to University of Alaska at Fairbanks, that tuition might be higher than, say, at COTS. And so we're trying to come to some, we're trying to figure it out. And we do this, though, it's not necessarily a new thing. I mean, every budget cycle, it's the same thing. We're trying, when we get more money, of course, that is wonderful because we can enhance our programs. But now we're in a situation that we're really trying to do what we do best with what we have. And tuition is the one thing that the regents, the president can suggest and the regents can approve a tuition increase. And of course, as you know, compared to many schools, the university's tuition is relatively low. Now, I'm not saying it shouldn't be lower, because it certainly has been lower in the past, but it is tuition that is not out of sight. We're working on it, and it's a conundrum, because there's limited funds, and the research funds are very good funds because they have an exponential quality with respect to the receipt thereof. If we receive more research funds, if that group of funding increases, which I'm not so sure whether that will level off or even decrease, but if that's the case, then, you know, tuition may be able to be left the same. So it's almost an algebraic formula type of thing. I mean, we're very concerned, though, from a region standpoint, each and every one of us. We do not want to put the burden on the students. We have, we look at other states like California, who are trying to bring back all their students that go everywhere, and what they're doing. And, it's a very difficult circumstance, because you don't want to have a situation where we can't educate Alaskans, because that's what we're here for. We're here to educate each and every Alaskan. And if it takes the type of mentoring that Dr. Schroeder does, as a matter of fact, in education, that's what we're doing. We're going to do as Herb is doing, going back and into the schools, and from seventh grade on, attempt to get these students so that they are in a pipeline through. So that, I'm sorry, that's a long answer to a pretty direct question, but it's a very difficult question.
Thank you very much, Ms. Hughes. And seeing no other questions before us, I'm going to open public testimony. Is there anyone online who'd like to testify regarding Ms. Hughes's appointment to the Board of Regents? Anyone in the room? Seeing none, thank you very much. I'm going to leave a public testimony open because we are going to have two more confirmation hearings. Thank you very much, and we're going to move on to the Professional Teaching Practices Commission. And we have online David Piazza, a superintendent with Southwest Region School District, who is here to talk to us. So, David, if you could, do you hear me? And can you introduce yourself, please?
Good morning. Are you hearing me okay?
We are. Go ahead.
Chair Hughes and members of the Senate Education Committee, it is my pleasure to be here for reconfirmation to the Professional Teaching Practice Commission, and that would be for the superintendent representative. For the record, my name is David Piazza. I am the current superintendent for the Southwest Region School District and have been in this role for almost 6 years. I have served the public educational system within Alaska for the past 32 years as a teacher, district-level specialist, district-level administrator, and superintendent. I look forward to continuing on the PTPC as role models providing instruction and guidance to the next generation. It is imperative that teachers and administrators adhere to the code of ethics. The PTPC is important as it provides educators with training to help prevent violations, as well as serves as an avenue for accused individuals to receive a fair and impartial review by their peers before any career-impacting sanctions are imposed. The legislature in 1966 established the PTPC as an independent commission to be governed by members made up by representatives practicing their profession within the K-20 educational community. I will continue to listen to and consider the facts presented and work with the other members to ensure that the integrity of the teaching profession remains at the highest possible level. I look forward to a chance to continue to serve in this capacity. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Piazza. Is there any questions, Senator Begich?
Mr. Piazza, so good to hear you. Again, this is Tom Begich, and a question I asked the other nominee that we had up here last week for the PTPC was, in the deed performance review, I'm not sure if you're familiar with it, but there are some recommendations for improving inefficiencies and to reduce duplication between the PTPC and teacher certification office in the department. Do you have any thoughts on that particular recommendation? Have you given it any thought, or is that an area that you're familiar with?
Sure. Through the chair, Senator Begich. The PTPC was established as an independent review, and it's a review by peers. So from my point of view, this is not duplication of efforts. The members of the PTPC are current practicing individuals, whether they're teachers, whether they're university faculty, whether they're principals, or like myself, you know, one superintendent. If a code of ethics violation, you know, is put forth, again, any member of the public, any teacher, any administrator, you know, can bring forth a complaint. And in our system of government, folks that are accused, you know, are allowed to be judged by their peers. And while the you know, the Department of Education is staffed with folks that are hopefully have been in education and in education for a length of time, that there may not be guarantee. There is guarantee with the way that the PTPC is set up.
Thank you very much for the answer, David. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Are there other questions, Senator Giesel?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Piazza, in reviewing your resume, first of all, thank you for desiring to serve on this board for a second term. I also appreciate that your experience in Alaska has been in rural Alaska. I see Unalakleet and Dillingham, of course, and I think that brings an important view to this commission. What do you see in terms of the big issues that the commission is addressing in terms of teaching, professional teaching practices in the years that you've been serving on the commission?
Well, each case is unique. I think the Professional Teaching Practices Commission, you know, has continued to provide outreach, and I think they've tried to strengthen that outreach into the pre-service programs, into the university programs, into making teachers and administrators aware, you know, of the code of ethics, and that we are all role models with our students that are around us. And so trying to, you know, when you look at Facebook and you look at different social media pieces that are relatively easy to utilize, again, making sure that as educators, we're professional, we're not, you know, stepping over that boundary between friendship that a social media platform or that easier forms of communication can sometimes blur those edges, that we are keeping all of our actions on a professional level between students. Again, you do need to have a relationship, you know, with students, but that relationship needs to remain very professional 100% of the time. So I think those are things that, you know, the commission is trying and the executive director is trying to make sure that folks stay aware of those things, and as young teachers come into the profession, continuing that part of the education that may not be formally addressed in their programs.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Are there any other questions? Seeing none, well, is there anyone online who'd like to testify regarding David Piazza's appointment to the Professional Teaching Practices Commission? Seeing none, is there anyone in the room? And seeing none, thank you, Mr. Piazza, for today for joining us. And we will move next to Kent Runyon, who has also been appointed to the same commission. So good morning, Kent. Can you hear us?
Yes, good morning.
Introduce yourself, please, for the record, and please tell us about yourself and your desire to serve on this commission.
My name is Kent Runyon. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. I've been an educator for over 10 years and have been in Alaska teaching social studies at Nome Belt High School for the past 7 years. While in Nome, I've worked both with teachers and students and with teachers in the area of teacher rights. Being from rural Alaska, I believe I can give a different perspective to issues facing teachers and students. I believe the Professional Teaching Practices Commission is an important body for protecting students, teachers, and the teaching profession, and I am honored to be nominated to the PTPC. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there questions for Mr. Runyon? Senator Begich.
Madam Chair, I like how you glanced right over here. Kent, I'm glad that you've decided that you wanted to put your hat in the ring and do this extra piece of public service beyond being a teacher. But my question is, why? What's the inspiration for wanting to serve on the PTPC? 10 years as a teacher is a great thing, but why serve?
Like I said in my statement, I think the PTPC is great for as a body that protects not just teachers or reviews teacher cases. I see it as a protection for students. If there's a teacher who has had difficult circumstances and shouldn't be in the classroom, I think I see that as a protection for students. I also see it as protecting the profession. I think of teaching, and many people do, as a calling. And if there is someone who isn't living up to the high standard of that calling, then this acts as a protection for teachers everywhere, so that one doesn't sully the name of many.
Thank you very much for that answer.
Are there other questions for Mr. Runyon? Well, thank you very much for being with us, and I see no questions before us at this time, so I'll open public testimony for Mr. Runyon at this time online. And there is no one at this time online. Is there anyone in the room? Seeing none, we will close testimony this morning. And Senator Coghill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In accordance with the Alaska Statute 3905080, I move that the appointments of David Piazza, Kent Runyon for Professional Teaching Practices Commission, and Mary Hughes for the University of Alaska Board of Regents be forwarded to the joint session for consideration. This does not reflect an intent by any of the members to vote for or against the confirmation of the individual during any further sessions.
Thank you, Senator Coghill. And seeing no objections, these appointments will be forwarded on to the joint session. And before we gavel out and sign the paperwork, I want to announce that our next meeting will be this Wednesday, March 22nd. And we will be hearing SB 87, School Construction Energy Efficiency Standard, and a Senate bill being introduced today relating to education and school districts by our committee. And if you would please stay and sign the committee report, we'll get on with our day. And with that, thank you very much. Oh, and one more thing before I gavel out. I would like to introduce Manny Budke, who is here on his spring break from HUNA, and he is interning with me for a few days, and then we'll go over and do the same for a House member. And he knows my parents that live in HUNA and a longtime family there, so I'm happy to have Manny with us. He's a high school senior, taking some of his coursework at the HUNA school and some homeschooling. So thank you, Manny, for being here. And with that, we will adjourn.